The Will Cain Show podcast is presented by the Capital One Saver Card. Earn 4% cash back on dining and entertainment, 2% at grocery stores, and 1% on all other purchases.
This is the Will Cain Podcast on ESPN Radio.
It's said that the definition of a good business deal is that it's a win-win proposition. Both parties walk away from the table with a win. Last night, the Los Angeles Rams traded wide receiver Brandon Cooks to the Houston Texans. And to read the critics today, they pulled off something rare. They pulled off the rare lose-lose deal. It's the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, SiriusXM Channel 80, and on ESPN News, presented by Progressive Insurance. And you can join the conversation at 888-729-3776. We got a fun Friday show. We got to assign our homework. What movies are we going to watch over the weekend? What category will we brainstorm and nominate and come back on Monday and decide who nominated the best buddy cop movie? After some pre-show debate, we've honed in on the category this weekend, which is buddy cop movies. You give us a call. You let us know. You help us set the big board, the brainstorming, the whiteboard, the options to choose from, which in the third hour of our show today, Bubba, Pat, Mike A., Nuno, and myself will nominate our favorite buddy cop movies. Also, Terry Bradshaw says, in fact, Tom Brady is not the best quarterback of all time, and Dana White has lost, for the time being, his battle to continue sports, to continue on with UFC 249 through the coronavirus pandemic. That's all coming up today on the Will Cain Show, but it's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. Brandon Cooks is now a Houston Texan. He was sent from the Los Angeles Rams for a second round pick, the 57th overall. And this has left many scratching their heads. It's left many looking at the Los Angeles Rams and saying they've spent so much and got so little in return. From Cooks to Gurley to Goff, the Rams are bleeding money and not getting wins in return. And the Houston Texans seem to be, in the public's estimation, one fumble after another. Bill O'Brien just doesn't know how to pull off a trade. A sampling of that will be to listen to ESPN football analyst Booger McFarland, who was on Get Up this morning.
But I know this, he's got to fix a lot of things once this pandemic gets back and he can come back and sit down and talk to his team. Because if I'm on that team, Greeny, I want a lot of answers and I want him directly from him.
Bill O'Brien owes his team some answers, according to Booger McFarland. Let me see if I can give you a couple here today on the Will Cain Show. I know that I have a contrarian instinct. I know that whenever there's a crowd in agreement, my knee-jerk reaction is to walk to the other side of the room. I do believe that it served me well in most instances. It's not infallible. I've been wrong on occasion. In fact, let me give you two examples where my contrarian nature led me in the wrong direction. I remember in the, I believe it was 2016 NFL draft, when the Chicago Bears traded up to the second overall pick to take Mitch Trubisky. They took Mitch Trubisky over Deshaun Watson and over Patrick Mahomes. I was on First Take with Stephen A. Smith, and I said, look, if there are people in the league that believe Mitch Trubisky is going to be this good, it's understandable that you trade up to get him. If he's your guy, you go get it. It was a terrible, terrible trade. It was a terrible decision, and I was wrong. Interestingly, I was also wrong in this contrarian instinct when it came to the Houston Texans and Brock Osweiler. I think many pointed out that Osweiler wasn't worth it. Don't know why the Houston Texans would go in on the then Denver Broncos quarterback. But I had seen what Bill O'Brien had done with so little at the quarterback position. I had seen him win divisions and go to the playoffs with a rogues gallery of journeyman quarterbacks. And I thought, this could be a good move for the Texans. I was wrong, but I'll tell you this. I'm happy to own my mistakes. I think my contrarian instincts generally lead me into the right situation because I think mobs are mostly dumb. I think crowds are mostly wrong. Today, the crowd wisdom is that the Rams and Texans have pulled off the rare lose-lose deal. It is an admission of failure by the Rams, and it's another bungled trade by the Texans. My contrarian instinct is kicking in once again. I actually think it makes sense for both parties. Let's take them one at a time. First, the Rams. So the Los Angeles Rams are now spending $74 million so that they can have Jared Goff and not Todd Gurley and Brandon Cooks. Warren Sharp at Sharp Football, who's a great Twitter follow, points out they're eating $38 million in dead cap between Gurley and Cooks and spending $36 million in cap, which is number one in the NFL, for Jared Goff. It's true the deals they struck for both Gurley and Cooks weren't the best deals in their form and their structure when the Rams decided to extend both of those players. They didn't even have to, for that matter. They could have rode Todd Gurley to the end of his rookie contract, which gave them a fifth-year option, and it would have ended about now. Same thing with Cooks. When they traded for him, they didn't have to extend him right away. But I don't fault the Rams for either what they did then nor where they are now, outside of the structure of those contracts. Windows are short. Windows are tight, both player windows and championship windows. Interestingly, this story was sent to me today. Several Major League Baseball players, one of which I believe is Cole Hamels, was talking about the desire among baseball players to get back and play, even if you have to leave your family now. And the reason why is because superstar players have such short windows. Their time, when they're at the top, when they're at their peak, it's short-lived. It's a year, it's a two, it's maybe 3 years. And so if you have an opportunity to play, you have to take it. Same thing with championship windows. They're tight. It's 1 year, 2 years, maybe three. And the Rams had their window. They went all in, and I get it. They traded for Cooks. They extended Gurley. They put all their chips into the basket and shoved it to the middle of the table and said, we're in. We want to win a title. They didn't. And now they're taking their medicine. And I think taking the medicine is part of the healing process. You got to get rid of these contracts. They got to get rid of Cooks. It was right to get rid of Gurley. They got to start into the next phase of their team-building philosophy. The next phase will put a ton of pressure on Sean McVay and Jared Goff, because now they carry the load, not a roster built around big-time players all across the board. 25% of their salary cap now is tied up with players that aren't going to be Rams. 25% on players that aren't even on the roster. But I think the Rams were right then. I think that they're right now. I don't know if those structures of those contracts was right, but I appreciate pushing your chips into the table, and I appreciate taking your medicine when it's time to move on to the next phase. And then there's the Houston Texans. Of course, you know this. Everybody has mocked the Texans, not just for their DeAndre Hopkins trade, but also for Jadeveon Clowney, and now for Brandon Cooks. They've gotten back, it seems, so little for what they sent out. SpotTrack, which is another great Twitter follow you should check out, said, it's clear now that the Texans are choosing depth. DeAndre Hopkins gave them 104 receptions for 1,100 yards and 7 touchdowns. Cooks, who they just traded for, plus David Johnson, who they got back for DeAndre Hopkins, and with the signing of Randall Cobb, well, that gives him 133 receptions for 1,700 yards and 5 touchdowns. Those three players together are more than DeAndre Hopkins, and it's spread out. By the way, the money's kind of the same, too. Hopkins, $41 million guaranteed. Those three players, about $38 million guaranteed. So the Texans have made a choice, and now we're left with many saying the choice is poor. Here's Lewis Riddick on This Morning on Get Up talking about the pressure on Bill O'Brien.
You know, when you think about what the Buffalo Bills gave up for Stephon Diggs, remember who is up there in a personnel capacity right now. It's Brian Gaine, who Bill O'Brien ousted down there in Texas. You start to wonder, was he not able to go ahead and have Buffalo be a player for DeAndre Hopkins because of the fact that maybe that relationship is strained? And you know how much I talk about managing relationships. So now it's going to call into question that relationship and how that maybe was mismanaged and led to Brian Gaine being ousted from there.
So I think what you're left with in your analysis of Bill O'Brien at the end of these two trades, Hopkins and Cooks, is you're left with sort of a multiple choice of three options. Number one, you can take what everybody is taking. The option that Bill O'Brien is an idiot and doesn't know how to manage a roster or execute a trade. Number two, you like it better. You like what I just quoted from SpotTrack. You like the diversity, the depth. You like the three players, Cobb, Johnson, and Cook, better than one player in Hopkins, a player that might want more money, probably will want more money, and this path is better than the previous path. Or there's a third option. And the third option is where I land. I still think there is yet more to the story. I still think there is more to the DeAndre Hopkins trade than simply diversifying your resources, decline to play a pair of money. I think there is more to the story for why the Houston Texans wanted to move on from DeAndre Hopkins. I think there's something in it for both teams. I think it's not a lose-lose proposition. I see the rationale for the Rams and the Texans. I can't go so far as to call it a win-win, but I don't think what everyone else is saying is accurate, that it's a lose-lose. And that's Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. Everything for less, only at Walmart. You can tell me what you think, 888-729-3776. Also, you can tell me which buddy cop movies we need to watch this weekend. UFC 249 is off. It looks like Dana White has lost the battle, maybe not the war, but the battle to continue sports through the coronavirus pandemic. But what's interesting is why. If we can figure out why, we might figure out when we get sports back and whether or not we'll get to see football in the fall. That's coming up on The Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app.
Capital One knows life doesn't alert you about your credit card. That's why we created Eno, the Capital One assistant that looks out for surprise credit card charges like overtipping, duplicate charges, or potential fraud, then sends an alert to your phone and helps if you need to fix them. Another way Capital One is watching out for your money when you're not. Capital One, what's in your wallet? See CapitalOne.com for details.
Geico gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name, check. Birthday, Social Security, is that a thing? Hey, mom, what is my Social Security number? Mom? 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 Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
Geico, always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
UFC 249 is off. President Dana White says ESPN, Disney, and some California politicians played a huge role. What does that mean for when sports will come back and what will influence the decision in the fall? It's the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. Our homework this weekend is buddy cop movies. Who will nominate the best buddy cop movie? We first have to set up our big board. Our brainstorming session. What even belongs on the board? During the commercial break, Bubba's already began to debate, is Seven a buddy cop movie? It definitely has two guys in it. I think that brings up the question, can you have a serious buddy cop movie? Or are they all lighthearted in some nature? What do you think, guys? I think we can go both ways. I think you can have serious and lighthearted buddy cop movies.
Are there a lot of serious buddy cop movies?
I think so. Well, like, what about not just Seven? You've got
Training
the
Day?
French Connection, right? That's up your alley, Pat. That's an old movie.
Do you have Training Day?
Training Day, I guess that's a buddy cop movie. They're not very good buddies in that movie. Yeah, you can have serious buddy cop movies.
I mean, I just don't think you can consider Seven a buddy cop movie. It's a great movie. I've actually seen it, one of the few I've seen. But when you think of buddy cop, do you really think of those two? And what's in the box? I mean, I don't think Seven really is a buddy cop.
Did you ever see the movie End of Watch with Jake Gyllenhaal?
Great movie.
Really good movie. Is that a buddy cop movie?
Possibly on my big board right now.
Okay, but that's a serious movie. Is it a buddy cop movie?
I think that's less, it is serious, but I think it's borderline. I think that's more of a buddy where there's literally two people literally riding in the car together. The whole movie is based on those two together driving around Los Angeles and literally acting as buddies. I think End of Watch is pretty close to being a buddy cop movie and also a great movie.
All right. I think we're going to put End of Watch on there. I think you can put Seven on there. I think you can put serious movies on the big board, on the brainstorming session for buddy cop movies, which you know is going to be populated by movies like Lethal Weapon and The Other Guys. Let's start the board. We'll put all that up there. You can contribute to it, 888-729-3776. In the third hour, the five of us will all nominate our favorite buddy cop movie. We'll watch them over the weekend. We'll come back on Monday and see who has won the competition. For now, UFC President Dana White has lost the fight to put on sports during the coronavirus pandemic. UFC 249 is canceled. And Brett Okamoto, our MMA reporter, was on GetUp explaining exactly why.
he was really putting his staff through the ringer, trying to put this, trying to keep this event together. And he had it. He had a partner in a venue in California. The fighters were on board. I mean, I talked to fighters yesterday before I spoke to Dana White, who said that they had received their flight information, that they knew where they were flying, that they knew where they were going to be transported to. So all systems were go for Dana White. But, you know, he is the leader of this universe. He is the most important man in mixed martial arts. But this issue has now expanded beyond his control, you know, and you heard it from him at ESPN. Some of the government officials in California expressed a lot of concern about, hey, we're telling the state to shut down. I know this is on an Indian reservation, but we really, really strongly urge you to not go through with this. And again, if it were up to Dana, I still think he would, but the decision was taken out of his hands.
You heard Brett say executives at ESPN, including some California politicians, all played a role in delaying, canceling UFC 249. It's something that Dana White confirmed in an interview with Brett Okamoto at a press conference. Listen to this on the role that Disney played in making this decision.
Today we got a call from the highest level you can go at Disney and the highest level of ESPN. One thing that I've said since we started our relationship and partnership with ESPN that has been an incredible one. It's been an amazing partnership. ESPN has been very, very good to us. And the powers that be there asked me to stand down and not do this event next Saturday.
Dana White laying out that not only did they play a big role in the decision to cancel UFC 249, but that his relationship with ESPN and Disney is in good shape, and he appreciates exactly their business relationship. What I think is fascinating is this. Senator Dianne Feinstein of California and Governor Gavin Newsom of California both played a big role in reaching out to Disney, to ESPN, and to Dana White to encourage him not to conduct UFC 249. It was scheduled to take place in California on tribal land. You know, throughout this entire pandemic and the decisions that have been made, I feel like many people involved have been able to make decisions based upon what they truly believe is best for public health, what they truly believe is best for the situation. In short, I perhaps naively think most people have been making decisions free of politics, free of partisanship. But I do recognize here the role that not politics, but politicians played in helping arrive at this decision. Notably here, Feinstein and Newsom. What that tells me is when we get sports back, when sports come back potentially in the fall, it won't just be a decision based upon public health. It won't just be a decision based upon business. It won't just be a decision free of politics. While I'm willing to grant that right now, these decisions are being made separate and apart from the role they play in politics or partisanship, I can't extend that same benefit of the doubt come fall. The nation is going to be engulfed in an election. This entire experience is going to be more incredibly, unbelievably perhaps, more intertwined with partisanship. And it'll be interesting to see, while I perhaps have had these conversations with you over the past month, and we have had these questions answered as to when will we get football back? When will the NBA resume? We've done it as though it's simply a business decision or simply a public health decision. And what I think this highlights is at some point politicians are going to play such a massive role in the decision. And when politicians play a role, eventually partisanship and politics will play a decision as well. So I guess this helps. While I think this is a decision everybody made, with nothing but good intentions in mind, when we have debates about when football comes back in the fall or when the NBA can or cannot resume in September, can we grant that same benefit of the doubt? Can we assume it will only be made for public health decisions? Can we assume it will only be made for what's best for business? Or will we be able to separate this from what will be a very divisive, partisan, and political climate in this country? In short, our conversations about when we're going to get sports back will probably become a political question very soon. It's the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio. My phone lines are lit up on whether or not the trade of Brandon Cooks from Los Angeles Rams to the Houston Texans was a lose-lose or a win-win for both teams. And what exactly is a buddy cop movie? I can see you're calling in. You're starting to help fill out the big board, and I want to hear from you. 888-729-3776. Coming up, our buddy Jeff Darlington jumps in. We'll talk about that trade and whether or not it is a lose-lose or a win-win. It's the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio.
GEICO gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that GEICO is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name, check. Birthday, Social Security, is that a thing? Hey, mom, what is my Social Security number? Mom? Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
GEICO, always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
I don't think you have to be a comedy. I think you can be a serious movie as well. I think to be a buddy cop movie, you just have to have buddies who are cops. What's the best buddy cop movie that needs to go on our big board? We're just going to nominate, and by the end of the weekend, choose who had the best buddy cop movie. It's the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive's Home Insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. I bet you Jeff Darlington has some good answers for what the best buddy cop movie is. I put him on the spot before in some of our movie competitions, and he at least had something to contribute. ESPN NFL insider Jeff Darlington is on the show. What's up, man?
I'm not. That's a tough one. I'm not even very good with that one. Starsky and Hutch
movies?
Is the one that comes to mind.
Starsky and Hutch was a TV show, but
there's a movie.
Oh, there Maybe was later. A reboot movie, right? With who was in that? That was
wasn't that Owen Wilson?
I never saw it. I think you're right. Yes.
Yeah. He was reasonably funny.
What about Nuno's? Nuno's trying to slip Turner and Hooch in. Is Turner and Hooch buddy cop movie?
Hooch being a buddy?
Yeah. Can is you have Hooch a dog buddy? As your buddy in your buddy cop
no,
movie?
No, that's not a buddy cop movie.
I don't know about that either. I got some good ones.
All right. Yeah, I don't have anything good there.
I'm going to fill out.
How you doing, William?
I'm good, man. How are you?
Pretty good. Good.
So, Darlington, I have to admit, and I did at the top of the show, that I have a natural contrarian instinct, and it doesn't always lead me in the right direction.
Yeah, you do.
It doesn't always lead me in the right direction, but I feel pretty good that it's more often than not the right instinct. I don't look at what the Los Angeles Rams and Houston Texans just pulled off in the Brandon Cooks trade and come to the same conclusion that it seems like everybody else has, which is that it's a lose-lose trade. I think everybody looks at the Rams and goes, look at all this money they've spent. Now 25% of their roster's on guys that aren't even on the Rams anymore. And on the Texans side, I see people thinking Bill O'Brien just can't pull off a trade. I actually make some sense of both of these things. You think I'm off base here?
So not necessarily. I think you're right to say it's not a lose-lose trade, but I do think that it is a trade that is the result of either controversial decisions in trading DeAndre Hopkins or inability to really manage your salary cap, as the Rams seem to have done. So I think that both teams had to do what they did in this trade. So I don't, in a vacuum, necessarily dislike the trade. I just think that it's a result of missteps, potentially. That would be, I guess, my way of sort of trying to walk the middle of the line on that one.
Oh, let's take them one at a time, okay? Let me tell you my rationale. So the Rams first. So what I look at the Rams, and I cannot defend every single thing the Rams have done in terms of the structure of the contracts they gave to Cooks and to Gurley. But the decisions they made to go all in a few years ago, I had the stats in front of me earlier that Cooks and Gurley accounted for something like, what was it, 30% of their offensive production during their Super Bowl run. These guys were incredibly important to what they were trying to accomplish. Here it is, by the way. It's more than that. The two players combined for 26 touchdowns. That's 47% of the team's total. And 3,000 yards, that's 38% of the team's total in 2018. So they thought their window was there. Yeah. They went all in on a Super Bowl. They paid who they had to pay, brought in who they had to bring in. It almost got them a title, but not quite.
I think that's a great point. And by the way, here's the thing. The problem is they didn't get the title. If they had gotten the title and they bought the title, essentially. And by the way, if you really want to go down that kind of hindsight rabbit hole a little bit, Todd Gurley had one of the most honestly underrated disappearing acts in Super Bowl history. I mean, what he was able to do earlier in the season and the year before, and then completely disappearing in the Super Bowl, like if he was there, if he was the player that the team had paid for before all of a sudden this quote-unquote mystery injury sort of snuck up, they win that game. They win the Super Bowl if Todd Gurley is the player that they paid. So,
wait, can I push back on that for a second? The way you're characterizing it, and I know you're reporting, so I assume things, or you do report, so you have very informed things that you're talking about. By the way, I've praised you way too much because you continue to defy this show. I swear, it's not even, Nuno, you're mad at him. Like, you got legit mad the other day. I can't remember what it was about, right? He burned us again. What was that one, Nuno, that got you so mad?
There's been so many lately with him, right, that he just shares all this information with everyone else. But I can't remember.
Right. He refuses to break something on the Will Cain Show. Refuses. And yet I still like this.
That's not true. I have said things on here that I haven't said on other shows, and they wind up coming true, but people think that we're just kind of shooting the
breeze.
Breeze. And they don't understand that maybe what we're saying is actually nuanced and factual.
Okay, right. You're just doing it smarter on the Will Cain Show. I got you.
Yeah, exactly.
Jeff Darlington here. No, but what I'm saying is you're very plugged in, so anything you're saying is well informed here. You're really saying that as though it was Gurley who dropped the ball on his performance on that Super Bowl run. The way that Gurley is kind of insinuating that story goes, it's McVay that dropped the ball on using him.
Right.
He acts like he wanted to be used, and it was McVay that dialed him back. I kind of hear something different from you now.
I don't know, and then maybe that's just choosing sides. You know, like that certainly seems like a pretty good example of. What did we see from Gurley, like more recently, that suggested that he was still the guy that we remember him being? And why would McVay suddenly pull back on him when he was so productive? Like, I just don't know Sean McVay to be the guy that all of a sudden, even if there was some grudge that somehow crept into the relationship, which I'm honestly not saying there is there, but even if there was, like, why would McVay suddenly pull back? That doesn't benefit anybody. So I don't know. I don't know how you go from being the elite running back in the NFL to suddenly just kind of gone. And I'm not even blaming Gurley, because I don't really tend to blame players for injuries or chronic injuries. I really don't. It's not their fault. But to sit here and say that Todd Gurley was the player that they paid in that Super Bowl and beyond, like that's a hard thing to really justify.
But we both agree, like, there's something to defend in the Rams' approach to going all in when you had your Super Bowl window, and they and you're right, if they'd won that Super Bowl, we'd be telling a very different story today. And they came one game away from winning that Super Bowl.
The Cooks acquisition was praised. The Cooks acquisition, Todd Gurley paying him made perfect sense. He deserved and earned the biggest contract for a running back in the NFL. Like, I get it now. And I don't think necessarily that – I think that the problem is when you're paying all of these guys – I get it that they went in, but you still kind of have to think ahead. Like, the draft pick thing kind of blows my mind even more so. Like, going and getting Jalen Ramsey, that felt like, all right, desperate move. We have to go get somebody to try to keep this run alive, as opposed to saying, like, maybe we're not quite that team that we thought we were. Maybe we need to scale back and build this thing the right way.
Right.
And I think that they just sort of hemorrhaged both draft picks and money at the same time. And that's the bigger problem I have, not necessarily the Cook situation in a vacuum and not necessarily the Gurley one in a vacuum. It's all of them together.
Yeah, they went all in. That's the point of going all in a poker game, right? You're making a bet that you're going to win the hand. Unfortunately, they didn't, and now they're taking their medicine. They've lost the draft picks. They've lost the salary cap space. Maybe, and this is really kind of beyond my particular salary cap knowledge, maybe they could have structured this in a much better way that wouldn't have put them behind the eight ball.
But Will, there's something called cash over cap in the NFL, right? I think I've mentioned this before on the show, but like a lot of guys will get, like Mike Tannenbaum, when he was in Miami, was often criticized down here because what he would do, it felt like to some, was, and this is debatable too, I'm sure he would defend himself in a different way, but that he would structure contracts almost to preserve the potential that year, even though they weren't necessarily going to make it to the Super Bowl. So you're kicking the can down the road. You're using a credit card to try to basically buy something that you can't necessarily afford at that time so that you can live a certain lifestyle in that moment.
Right.
It doesn't make sense for teams like that, but when the Rams did it, it actually did make sense. That is the time when you want to use the credit card, when it is to buy that extra player that's going to put you over the hump. So I do know exactly and understand and can defend sort of what you're saying there.
Oh, I love that analogy, man. It's not that debt is always bad. It's when you're capable of servicing it and when it's capable of paying off for you. You're exactly right. Debt is a useful tool at some times. The Rams used it, I think, at the right time. Now they're taking their medicine. Now they're having to pay it off. Okay, let's go to the other side now. I also want to pitch you on Houston, on Bill O'Brien. I don't think it's that bad for the Texans either, but I got to take a quick break. You're going to hang out with us, and we'll see if the Texans have been on the lose side of these deals as well.
I'll give you a little nugget that will help your fantasy football owners.
Oh, okay, good. That's a good tease. All right, right after the break, more Jeff Darlington.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
Still hanging out with Jeff Darlington here on the Will Cain Show. I want to talk to you about the Houston Texans side of this trade, Jeff, but let me ask you something really quickly. And I've heard this before, and everybody is talking about the structure of Todd Gurley's deal when he was extended was terrible. They didn't have to do that. The timing, all of it, right? And everybody in the league has kind of said that was a bad deal the minute it was done. Why did the Rams extend Gurley when they did in the way that they did?
That's a good question, and probably when we talk about the other side of the coin and people who maybe wonder why the Rams, like we were kind of talking about the positives that you can look at, a team that went all in, I think the other side of the coin would look at that and say they were almost like just, you know, pulling an Oprah, like you get a contract, and maybe that's not the most conservative approach. Like Belichick never would have done something like that, for instance. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's important to be conservative. That's where I wonder how this thing ultimately plays out when we look back on this. Because while I think you can defend the idea of going all in on that Super Bowl and someone like Les Snead, the GM, and Kevin Demoff, who kind of oversees all of it, that's where they would defend some of those actions. But I think at the end of the day, ultimately it's going to be tough for Snead to defend that for very long. I think that he's going to have to come around and put together a roster that is successful without being overly liberal when it comes to giving out contracts.
Yeah, I mean, so rebutting my own argument, you know, it's like, yeah, you're right. You do go in.
Okay.
It is okay. When you go in, it's good. It's a good philosophy. When you have your window, go in. Use the credit card if you have to. But the rebuttal is, you didn't have to with Gurley. Why did you do that? You didn't have to pay him in that way at that time.
And I guess the other thing is the draft picks. Like then again, doing it with Ramsey, and that's where the collective, and that's after the Super Bowl run. It's like almost like. When you realize, okay, we didn't get the Super Bowl that we were trying to essentially pay for, and now we just have to make the most of this, and we're going to give away first round. You know, like that's when you start to really dig the hole even deeper. But
right.
And by the way, I was teasing before the break about I was talking to Jared Goff yesterday after Cooks was traded, and one of the things that he said, like he was just talking about how Cooks is such a high character guy, a perfect locker room guy, the kind of guy you want on your squad, but he also understands it from the team perspective. Some of the things that we've been talking about, but the one thing that I didn't know or think about here is that they love Josh Reynolds. That this is also about letting Josh Reynolds, you probably don't even know who he is, Texas A&M guy, I think he's third or fourth year, they're ready to let him eat. And they think, and Jared thinks this guy is an absolute stud. So, watch out for him to be like I'm saying breakout player of the year next year.
That was kind of your fantasy. By the way, I do know who Josh Reynolds is. I host the Fantasy Football Now show on Sundays, you know. But so is that your fantasy nugget, that Josh Reynolds is a fantasy guy?
He'll go from being a fourth receiver to, like, vying for number one reps next year. That's my call. Nice.
Okay, we only have a couple minutes, so I want to do this. Again, I could be wrong. My instinct's leading me the other way from everyone else. The consensus is O'Brien is an idiot. Why would you trade away Hopkins for Cooks and Johnson? Mm-hmm. If you kind of even it out, and I know there's some of these picks are in 2021, some of them are in 2022, some of them are this year. But when you start crossing out values, meaning seconds and fourths, it essentially comes down to they sent DeAndre Hopkins out, got back Brandon Cooks and David Johnson and a fourth, and then with some of that money that Hopkins would have had, signed Cobb, right? And so the production actually ends up more in what they brought in. Of course, you know, four quarters doesn't always equal a dollar, and Hopkins is a dollar, right?
Correct.
But so I look at this and go, okay, we have three options. Bill O'Brien's an idiot, like everybody says, okay? That's number one. Number two, you actually like this four quarters instead of a dollar. That's number two. Or number three, and I think this is the case, Darlington, there's something more to the Hopkins and Texans story that we don't yet know.
Well, I mean, I think that what we can – I mean, the relationship there, I don't care what Bill O'Brien says. I'm actually kind of a little bit pro O'Brien. I think he's actually a really good coach. The question, obviously, is whether he's also a good general manager. But the coach, Bill O'Brien – He wasn't gelling with DeAndre Hopkins. Anybody with the Texans will tell you that. So as much as the GM, Bill O'Brien, wants to say that essentially behind the scenes that Hopkins wanted a new deal and they weren't going to pay him the money that he wanted ultimately, that to me, it was the coach, Bill O'Brien, not being able to gel with the player. So I just, like, that comes down to, you know, Bill O'Brien is the boss and decided he didn't want Hopkins, but he is essentially putting his job on the line with that trade, in my opinion. Because that's not just trading Jadeveon Clowney when he's franchise tagged and you're really not seeing yourself paying him down the road, so you're just going to get rid of him now to get some value. That is getting rid of the best player at his position in the NFL, arguably, for what feels very clearly like diminished value. Like too low.
All right, so I'm up against the break. Just for the record, giving me fantasy football nuggets is not the equivalent of breaking news on Get Up, for the record.
Thank you for listening to the Will Cain Podcast. You can listen to the Will Cain Show live weekdays at 3 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on the ESPN app. The Will Cain Podcast.